Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and reading with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
Is it possible to reconcile science and religion? Many people want to, but in the words of C.S. Lewis, they find their intellect getting in the way. My two guests today are academics who will explore what they have learned about the positive relationship between science and religion. My first guest is an author, scientist, preacher, and professor. Paul Wallace teaches physics and astronomy at Agnes Scott College in Decatur, Georgia. He has a Ph.D. in nuclear physics from Duke University. Later, he earned a Master of Divinity from Candler School of Theology at Emory University in Atlanta. He spent three summers as a faculty fellow at NASA's Space Flight Center. He also teaches theology at Candler and at Columbia Theological Seminary in Atlanta. He has a deep affection for Buddhism and has twice served on the faculty of the Emory Tibet Science Initiative in Dharamsala, India. He has now written a book unlike any other in faith and science literature, Stars Beneath Us, Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos. It draws on his upbringing as a Baptist, his doctoral work in experimental nuclear physics and gamma ray astronomy, and his ordination to the gospel ministry. Paul Wallace, welcome.
Thank you very much, Nancy.
And I'm also asking to join us, my second guest is a writer, researcher, and speaker also interested in theology and science. Greg Cuzzona is a lecturer in the Department of Religious Studies and Humanities at California State University, Chico. He has a BA in Comparative Literature from UC Berkeley and a Master of Divinity from Princeton Theological Seminary. He received his PhD from Berkeley's Graduate Theological Union and has done postgraduate study at universities in Germany. He was Associate Pastor for Adult Discipleship at Bidwell Presbyterian Church in Chico and Fifth Avenue Presbyterian in New York City. He has been interviewed by CNN and the New York Times and has appeared on the NBC Today Show three times. He is the author of five books, including C.S. Lewis and the Crisis of a Christian, Creation and Last Things at the Intersection of Theology and Science, and is currently writing Emerging Adults, Christian Faith and Science. Greg Cuzzona, welcome.
It's great to be here, Nancy.
Is that an accurate count, five? Is that the books you've written so far?
So far, five, yeah.
And you're working on your sixth
number
one.
Number six, yes.
Well, Paul Wallace, welcome again. And
thank you.
This is your first book, right?
That's right. It is.
And the title of your book is rather interesting because we think of stars being above us, but the title of your book says Stars Beneath Us.
Right.
How did that title come about? What does that mean?
Well, it's based on a story that happened to me quite a while ago. I was teaching a class, introductory astronomy class. And I was talking about what you see when you just walk out with your naked eye under a clear sky. And I said that, you know, in best situation, you can see about 3,000 stars over your head, you know, on a clear night. That's the best you can do, 3,000 stars. And then I quickly added that if we were to remove the Earth from underneath us, that you would see about 3,000 more under your feet for a total of about 6,000. And I went on, I was going to mention something about the constellations, but I noticed that there was a student about three rows back on the left who had this look of trauma on his face. He looked a little bit terrified. And it was so alarming that I actually stopped the lecture and asked him if something was wrong. And he sort of laughed and grinned a little bit and said, no, I'm fine. It's just that you said that there were stars under my feet, and I had never really thought of that before. Now, this kid was 20 years old, and he was a good student. And of course, he knew there were stars under his feet. But I think he had kind of an existential moment there where he all of a sudden realized that those stars were actually down there, and I think he probably imagined himself sitting on a ball, you know, floating in space. So you got a new perspective. And this thing that had only been an idea in his head, you know, that there's this Earth with stars all around it, became real for him. And he sort of had this deep insight into the way things really are. And that's sort of where the title of the book came from.
Well, I'm just wondering if Greg Cuzzona can identify with this this kind of like the light bulb goes off over a student's head, because he is currently teaching a class. What's the name of your class right now?
It's just Science and Religion. Very straightforward. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in that class, it's cross-listed in philosophy and in religious studies. So we're seeking to look at the philosophical and then some of the scientific and religious aspects of how these two relate. And it's okay if I ask a question to Paul?
Oh, please do.
So, Paul, I got a chance to read through your book.
Oh, great.
Which was really enjoyable. It's very – I think you talk about making it personal, and it's an incredibly approachable book for this somewhat august intellectual topic of science and religion.
Yeah.
And when you told that story about the stars beneath us, if I'm – and this is a kind of question of, did I get this right? You use that, it seems to me, to help us understand that God isn't there like the God of classical theism up there, but that just like the heavens aren't up there, but there's a way in which the universe you describe is much more integrated. Is that accurate to what you're working to do in the book?
Yeah, that's wholly accurate. And I think that we tend to think of God in intellectual terms. And of course, we have to. And I'm not saying that it's not a good thing. I love theology, but I think that oftentimes we do so, and the presence of God and the reality of God sort of passes us by. If all we ever do is think about God and not experience God, and so that was kind of what I was getting at.
Well, absolutely. I was jumping on what maybe Nancy was going to add something too, but. When I first started getting involved in church and in Christian worship, which was for me as a young adult, I always thought that life as a believer was about doctrine and belief and that sort of thing. But I've really realized, especially now as I'm an academic in religious studies, that religious faith is a lot about myth or story and ritual and community. And sometimes I think what happens with religion and science is we desiccate religion from all the good parts, you know, the stories and the personal experiences, in order to make it relate to science. And you as a scientist were able to do that such integration that was very winsome, I think.
Well, thank you.
Let me remind people the title of Paul's book is Stars Beneath Us, Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes these notions of God are so deeply embedded that we don't realize that our notion of God is up there.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid, even though he was 20 years old, it was a new idea for him to realize, no, stars aren't just up there.
Right.
There isn't any up and down, really.
Right. And more than that, he got involved in it. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just about the stars. It was about him, himself. His embodied self in relation to the stars. It wasn't just where the stars are, but where he is relative to them, and how he's been in the middle of this thing his whole life and never really realized it.
And how also I think you point out that the stars are part of us. So many of our chemical molecular structures come actually from stars, right?
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
I think that would be really exciting to teach this age group. Because just like the experience that Paul was describing with this student, Greg, I would think that you have similar experiences where a kid just suddenly sees things in a way that they have never seen them before.
Oh, I think that's right. I mean, I think one of the things I've noticed about this demographic, for me, which I'm thinking of 18 to 30, the millennials with 30 to 34% that do not affiliate with religion or are nuns, as they're called, N-O-N-E-S's, is that doesn't mean that they're not interested in spiritual life or even in a religious life, meaning a Christian or Buddhist life or whatever, but that they're just not affiliating. So sometimes one of the things I do is I have my students watch some of the best commentators on science and religion through video, which is an amazing resource we have. So I have them watch Francis Collins, who's the head of the NIH and a committed Christian, and I have them watch Richard Dawkins, who's the well-known atheist. And for many of the students on the side of seeing God in science, when they listen to Collins talk about how he sees God in the genome and the connections with information, and that this is a scientist who doesn't see this contradiction, there is a light bulb that goes on, and it's really exciting to watch.
I might remind listeners that this is Professor, may I call you Professor?
Sure,
you have
that's
a doctorate.
Fine. Yeah.
Sure.
Greg Cuzzona, who teaches at Chico State University in the Department of Religious Studies and Humanities. And my other guest is Paul Wallace, who has a new book called Stars Beneath Us, Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos. And you mentioned working with this demographic, Greg. I might also say that you direct a $2 million grant funded by the John Templeton Foundation called Science and Theology for Emerging Adult Ministries. And the acronym is at STEAM. And
you or say, we even say STEAM. That is picking up steam, right? Yeah.
Picking up steam, yes. That stands for Science and Theology for Emerging Adult Ministries.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, that Paul worked with Andy Rood, who did a very similar grant with high schoolers, with high school ministry.
Yeah.
And Tony Jones,
yeah,
I think.
And we're working on it.
Okay, right now.
In the middle. I mean, it's very much a present thing we're working on, yes.
Yeah, so this was a part of the Templeton Foundation, I assume, that wanted to see how to connect with this demographic, because it's often a demographic that sees science as one of the reasons not to go to church, basically. In other words, that the church's anti-science stance is a reason not to affiliate. And so at least for my motivation was to say, well, let's make sure that that's actually what is necessary. In other words, is it necessary to see science as a bad thing, or can we see a way to integrate them? And that's behind the grant that I do, the STEAM grant. And it looks like, Paul, you're working with Tony and Andy on some of the work they do with high school students.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, speaking of high school, Paul, I was surprised to hear that you struggled in high school and that you didn't experience academic success until you got to college.
No, that's a little known fact. Usually people see a physics professor and assume that they'd always make
good
grades.
That's what I would expect.
During high school, I don't know, I don't know what it was, and I've thought about it quite a lot. I went to a private Catholic high school, and it was fairly competitive academically. And all my friends made good grades, but for some reason, maybe I just wasn't aware of it at the time, but maybe that environment just turned me off. I don't know. But my grades, I graduated, but I don't know. I, maybe had a C-plus average or something, out of high school, And I don't know what it was, but when I got to college, I turned on. It was totally different. Once I got out of my own, I don't know what it was, but when I got to college, that's when my grades started coming up.
Well, I happen to be familiar with a little liberal arts college that you attended, and happen to know two of the three teachers that you mentioned as being a strong influence on you. These three courses, one was a literature course, Betty Sellers, and I happen to know Betty. She was quite a character.
She was quite a character.
And we used to, over lunch, have wonderful discussions of literature. And then John Kay, who taught world religion. You said his class in world religion was very influential. And John Kay was a favorite of mine as well at this liberal arts college. I wasn't familiar with your physics teacher, but I could see how he would inspire you.
Yes, and actually Bob Nichols, who taught calculus.
Oh, yes. Bob is a great tennis player.
He didn't make it into the article. We're mentioning an article in this college's magazine.
Alumni magazine, mm-hmm. Yeah. Bob Nichols was also a great tennis player. He and his son both.
Yes.
And I happened to
love tennis.
Yeah, and I happened to have had his son in one of the classes I taught, and he was a wonderful student. But so, with this in mind, how inspired you were by these particular teachers when you went off to college, I'm sure that excites you and motivates you to be working with this age group where you can make a difference in their lives.
Yeah, it is, and it was really my experience in college, those first couple of years in college, that made me want to be a professor. I figured out then that that's what I wanted to do, because I never really had teachers who inspired me like the ones did when I was in college, and that's what I wanted to do. Yeah, it's definitely what it was.
Well, remind listeners that Paul Wallace has just been telling us about his experiences with his college. And Paul Wallace has a new book that is entitled Stars Beneath Us, Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos.
And can I put in a plug for that book?
Oh,
it's extremely readable, so I recommend it to you. It's if you're a little if you're listening and you're a little bit maybe put off or concerned that the science and religion topic is going to feel too intellectual or too academic, this is a very personal book, which is also very thoughtful at the same time. It's a really nice blend.
Thank you for that.
And Greg Cuzzone knows whereof he speaks because he has years of experience exploring this topic himself.
Yes. Can I, you know, I think I never answered the question you asked initially, which is what was one of my experiences kind of convergence? Is it okay if I do that?
Please do.
So I was thinking about that, and there's been a many, many different experiences. As we've discussed in the past, I did not become a Christian until I was in college. So it wasn't that I was trying in some ways to integrate my ongoing Christian faith with science, but as I was in undergrad, I was trying to take all kinds of different disciplines alongside this burgeoning faith. But it I think one of the times I think about, I reflect on one of the times that comes to mind, I should say it that way, in graduate school, in my PhD, when I was at the Graduate Theological Union, and one of my professors—
At Berkeley.
At Berkeley, yes. One of my professors, Robert Russell, has a PhD in physics from UC Santa Cruz, and has MDiv from Pacific
Master
School.
Master Divinity.
Yes, Master Divinity. Thank you. Yep, in the alphabet soup there. And I remember him talking about how beautiful the structures of, say, special relativity are and what that means for the way we understand space and time and space-time in their relationship. And, it, you know, there's a lot of intellectual work I did in my PhD for sure, but in some ways it's that personal love that Robert has for putting together his incredible devotion to science and his faith as a Christian, that's what I think was almost more powerful than anything, or at least inspirational. And it seems to me one of the things, again, that Paul's doing, but I think is a good idea in general, is to bring back story and to bring back narrative and the way this connection can be so profoundly challenging, for sure, but can also be profoundly invigorating and can open vistas that you never thought of.
My guest that was just talking is Greg Cuzzone. He is currently working, writing a book called Emerging Adults, Christian Faith and Science. And my other guest, a physicist, Paul Wallace, whose book is Stars Beneath Us, Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos. Now, Greg was just saying that he didn't become a Christian until he was already in college. And the two of you have similarities, but one difference is that, tell us what your upbringing was, Paul.
Oh, I was brought up in the Baptist church. It was pretty liberal for a Southern Baptist church, which puts it pretty much in the middle of the cultural spectrum. But I had a wonderful upbringing in that church. I was really, truly loved there, and I loved going to church. I loved everything about it. My best friends were there. The adults there loved me, even when I wasn't lovable. And but even so, as I grew through high school, I began to question, what I was being taught. And I never really spoke up. I was never really a flag waver or cranky in Sunday school. But I really wondered privately about everything. And so by the time I did graduate from high school and left that church and went on to college, I was really not what I would call a believer anymore. I never was. Because my upbringing was so positive, I never turned against it, and I was never an atheist of any stripe.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't reject.
I definitely was not a Christian, and dropped out basically because I just couldn't. It was sort of a slow process of this is not relevant to me,
the
this
dawning
doesn't make sense to me. I'm learning about all this science and this story I'm getting at church just does not fit in. I'm not sure what its relevance is, so I just kind of let it go.
And also at home, you had conversations with your dad about religion.
Yeah, I didn't bring it up very often. I don't know why it was, but I was not the, I was not one to get into an argument. But I did ask my dad one week in Sunday school, we had this fellow come with this, and I tell the story in the book with this chart of the end times, about how. From the book of Revelation and maybe the book of Daniel, about how the world's going to end involving the rapture and all this. And I went and I asked my, and I think the only religious question I ever asked my dad was, I said, "Dad, is that, you know, what about all that stuff?" Because it seemed pretty scary to me. And he just looked at me and said, "That's not true." So he said, "Son, that's not true." Mm. And I never really, you know, gave it any thought after that. My dad was an enormous influence on me, but for some reason I never challenged him when it came to theology or religion.
My guest is Paul Wallace, and he is telling us about his upbringing in the Baptist Church. His book is Stars Beneath Us. He is a physicist. And I wanted to ask my other guest, Greg Cuzzona, about your parents and when you were growing up. I'm guessing that you didn't have discussions like that with your parents.
No, we didn't. We had the another kind of discussion in terms of faith, that faith was not something that was rational, that was really supported in the family. So we had a kind of functional atheism, I would say, in my household. And for us, one of the key factors was the philosophy of Ayn Rand and objectivism. And
oh, really?
Yeah, that was huge for us. And the idea that we needed to be our own support and our own, we didn't need to rely on other people and that sort of thing. And so it was really the idea of believing in a God was definitely not a part of my upbringing. And so when my parents, as I think of them, as I say this, I have to say they just both died last year. So I want to give them honor and say what beautiful people they are. And toward the end of their life, they certainly did not have this perspective. But when I became a Christian as a first-year student at Berkeley, I mean, you can imagine, you know, your son goes off to Berkeley. What kind of cult is this person in? You know,
of all universities in the entire United States, Berkeley. I remember when I found that out about you, Greg, I was really quite surprised.
Yeah, this should be an oxymoron. Go to Berkeley, become a Christian. You know, that does not make sense. But so I guess I decided, let me get into the most buttoned down rational church you can be, which was the Presbyterian Church. You know, that,
okay, maybe that was part of it.
So at any rate, yeah, it was not part of my life. And although science in particular was not the only factor that I was working with, still science as it supported a certain atheism and secularism was. And it was seen as unscientific or irrational to become a Christian.
Right.
But for me, it was this sense of needing to find meaning in life and needing to find a source of love and pursuing that in this experience that so many of us have as we go to college. We're looking for, you know, a worldview or however you want to describe it, something that will direct and give meaning to your life. I began to look into various religions, began to talk with people, and read the Bible, and the person of Jesus really captivated me. So that was how my path came to, you know, to become.
Evolved.
Yeah, it evolved in a way, exactly. Yeah, and then, you know, I was as we were talking, we talked a little bit, Paul, before we got on the phone today, and what Nancy and I did, and she was asking me about, well, where did science play in? Was that a factor that made you not believe, or was it a struggle? And for me, it was actually science really started out as something that was very positive, that was this great. Because C.S. Lewis was a big influence on me, and his whole engagement of the intellect was such a part of me. In fact, I would say
you
that
wrote an entire book on C.S. Lewis.
I did, and I think for Lewis it was that the way that Christians understand the world, or the Christian faith presents the world, is actually the most intellectually sustainable. So when I compared it with Foucault, whom I love, Michel Foucault's work, or with Nietzsche, or whatever, I would say, no, this is actually really profound. So for me to engage science was part of that path. And it actually came through that path that then I began to hear more and more of, in this case, the thought leaders saying, well, hasn't science disproved Christianity? Hasn't science disproved faith? And so then I began to see this whole warfare of religion and science, which is part of the history of ideas, and it has its own critique and literature about it, but that was something I needed to deal with as a Christian. So for me, science became a problem only because it had presented for many a problem of faith. And so really, right, I've had this ongoing relationship with science. And finally, when I started doing my graduate work, I recognized how critical it was to bring these two together. I know Paul's given over to quoting Alfred North Whitehead. He's one of the thinkers in my dissertation. And Whitehead, to paraphrase him, said, we've got these two great forces, science and religion, and the importance is for us to figure out the relations between them. That's the core, that's the task of this generation. Now, this generation was 1925 when he said that.
Yeah.
So it's 90 years later, and we're still trying to work it out, but I think he was right about the need.
I think so, too.
Don't you think? Yeah.
This just been talking is Greg Cuzzona, and his book about C.S. Lewis is C.S. Lewis and the Crisis of a Christian. He is currently writing Emerging Adults, Christian Faith and Science. And my other guest is physicist Paul Wallace, whose book is Stars Beneath Us. And here's a quote, Greg, you probably saw this in Paul's book, that it has been argued that sometimes by eminent theologians that religion and science are such different things that they really don't belong in the same room. It's like comparing an organ and a vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's what the two of you are up against, that people are arguing that religion and science are so different. They just, you can't reconcile them.
Well, and it's really interesting to my particular group that I look at is 18 to 30 year olds, especially with this grant and in terms of my own, some of my research. And there's two interesting studies that came out to talk about that exact problem, you might say. If you look at undergrads, about 70% of a survey of 2,300 undergrads asked, do the teachings of science and religion ultimately conflict? 70% said yes. Now, when another question was posed to 11,000 undergraduates, what is the best relationship for you? Or complete the sentence, for me, the best relationship between religion and science is, 69% chose the answer, independence or collaboration. So here's this interesting thing. People in the emerging demographic that is continuing to lead and will you know, define our country more and more is saying, out there, the religions of, I understand that the teachings of religion and science ultimately conflict. But in here, 69% say, this is just
in, and Greg is gesturing
into my heart, yeah, and to who I am, I want to see some kind of reconciliation.
So, but they might not see how that could be.
That's why you and I can have a job, Paul.
That's right.
But I mean, that's, I really, right, think that in some ways, you know, I as a professor, it's not my job to, I don't think, to convince people of one way to relate science and religion.
Right.
But I certainly want to show them this is a viable, this meaning collaboration or independence is a viable way. But conflict, I think at the end of the day, most people don't really want that. They may think it's out there, but they don't really want it themselves.
Yeah, I actually think of the conflict idea as something that doesn't, I mean, I think it's on the way out, if looking at the big picture. Mm-hmm. I think that the simplistic kind of, you know, one-on-one sort of diametrically opposed kind of thing is kind of on the way out. And it's my view that science can actually provide one of the finest entryways into faith than anything can.
Well, I want to continue this conversation, Paul, but we do need to take a short break.
Sure.
And when we come back, I want to continue this thought. Also, Greg, I want to ask you about the Chico Triad. I think Paul might be interested in that. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. Thank you. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guests are authors who explore the intersection of science and religion. Greg Cuzzone is a lecturer in the Department of Religious Studies and Humanities at California State University. He's author of 5 books and is working on a 6th. And one of his books was Creation and Last Things at the Intersection of Theology and Science. And my guest, Paul Wallace, teaches physics and astronomy at Agnes Scott College in Decatur, Georgia. He has a PhD in nuclear physics from Duke University. And he has written a book, Stars Beneath Us, Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos. I might mention, since the subject of Agnes Scott College came up and Greg was saying that Presbyterianism appealed to him, that Paul, you probably know the history of Agnes Scott where you teach, don't you?
Well, I do know that it was originally founded by the Presbyterian Church, yes.
I thought that was an interesting connection.
Yeah, BCUSA. And
there's a seminary for women.
Yes. There's a longstanding relationship with Columbia Theological Seminary, which is also Presbyterian, and it's just a mile from here.
Located Agnes Scott is in Decatur, which is right
Decatur,
a suburb
right,
of
right,
Atlanta,
which
is where you were
suburb.
From.
Yes.
You were born in Atlanta.
That's right.
Paul, I had a question for you. We were discussing earlier some ways that people want to connect religion and science. And one of the things I took from your book throughout, but let's just say at the end of the book, you're talking about moving away from the creation ex nihilo, the creation out of nothing concept, into more of a creation out of chaos concept.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting at through that is it seems to me one of the ways to reconcile religion and science is that science is going to speak to our religious concepts and change them to some degree, and that will be part of the way that reconciliation occurs.
Yeah.
Would you say that's true?
I do think that. I think in the interaction between science and theology or faith or whatever you want to call it, I do think that our understanding of the cosmos that we've developed over the last 400 years is so overwhelmingly different than anything that was imagined before, back when theology got its basic structure. I do think that in the end, theology will and should change as it always has, but I think that science does present it with a particularly challenging set of questions, and I think that it should change in the face of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's one way that
not be non-Christian or something else, but I do think that there are changes that should be made. I do think that a lot of the classical theological ideas just don't match very well up with what we now know to be the case.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the issues that get in people's way is sometimes they, as far as I'm reading your book, it is these conceptions that need to be revised and brought to bear and have contemporary science brought to bear on them.
Yes, that's right.
In fact, your book says Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos.
Right. And I just, that whole idea of evolution in particular is, it seems to me that you can build a system of thought in which classical Christianity and science can survive. But I see them as being, it's an intellectual problem solved, but it doesn't really deeply satisfy, I think, on a more intuitive level. I think that there should be more harmony between them than you can get just by simply trying to solve a logical puzzle and make them fit each other somehow. I'm talking about classical theism and classical Christian theology and the cosmos as we know it, science as we know it.
Well, as a part of, Greg used to be an associate pastor, so he had wore that hat. He's no longer doing that currently. But you, Greg, professionally, you are totally involved in this subject of science, religion. You teach your classes. And then, Paul, you're totally a scientist at your university position, your college at Agnes Scott College.
Yeah, although I do teach at the seminaries occasionally, but and here at Agnes Scott, my normal job, yes, is all science.
So your students either see you as a physicist or as a theologian. And
right.
they probably know that you wear this other hat. Did they ever ask you about that?
Yeah, some of them really do. In fact, usually about once or twice a semester, a student comes in and sits down and says, "Look, I know what you do, and I want to ask you about it." You know, because they go online and they look up stuff and they figure it out. You know, I don't talk about it in class, mm-hmm. but they figure it out because it's a small college and they figure it out. And so, yeah, I do get conversations started all the time, and so. That's once or twice a semester I get somebody actually coming to my office saying, "I need to talk to you about this." But it comes up several times, you know, every semester in more casual places too, in the hallway or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get the question, I'll ask Greg this, that they ask you about they know you were a pastor at the Presbyterian Church probably. Do they ever ask you about your personal beliefs?
Not all students know that I was a pastor at Bidwell. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think increasingly that will be less known by the
as
students.
As time goes by.
That's right. Yes. If I have time for a 45-second vignette about that, I'll answer it that way. So I first started teaching at Chico State because I was asked to do so quite willingly and happily. But that sets up the scene in which I was a little bit tenuous in my relationship with Chico State, assuming that this one class, science and religion, that I was taught to instruct on, I was given sort of a trial. So the first day I was teaching the class, I thought to myself, well, my students probably want to know, where am I on all this?
Where do you stand?
Yeah. And so I said, you know, hey, I want you to know that I come to this as a Christian, as a person of Christian belief, and that's my angle on this. Now, I also want you to know, because I'm a Christian, I have a deep sense of what it is to be misrepresented sometimes by those who speak about Christianity. So when I talk about atheism, I want an atheist to be saying, "This is what I believe." Or I talk about Islam, I want a Muslim to say, "This is what I believe." That's the way I do it. But I am a Christian, and that's how I'm going to come to this topic. Of course, we're at a secular state university next door. Beautiful, lovely, great state university. And I thought, class dismissed. Okay, I just blew it. You know, half of my class, it was full.
You think
30,
you lost them?
Yeah, I lost them. It's going to be canceled. There goes Chico State. So I came back the next day. Well, 2 days later, it was Tuesday, Thursday class. I came back on Thursday, and there were more students because they were really interested in how do I bring my faith to science. And how do I put those two together? Now, this generation is a really interesting one because they have had so much information. They are very able to take in a lot of disparate information and not necessarily have to subscribe to it. But they want people, in my experience, who are honest and direct and have integrity about it. So for me to say, I'm a Christian, this is how I do it, was really compelling to them. And so I will describe my own faith if I feel like it's relevant to the class. And if I can say this is a little bit of a self-promotion, but I think it's relevant, is that the evaluations I get back often say, you know, Dr. Cuzzona was the most open-minded professor I've had. So there's a lot of lessons for me in that. And one is, yes, I will disclose my faith. The second is that people actually are really interested. And the third is that commitment and openness aren't antithetical. You can be very committed to what you're about, but you can be open to bringing that to people around you. So yes, I will bring it out again, depending on whether it's relevant or not.
Right.
I'll remind listeners that this was Dr. Greg Cuzzona, who was telling us about his class, and he has written quite a number of books. One, Creation and Last Things at the Intersection of Theology and Science. He's currently writing Emerging Adults, Christian Faith, and Science. And Professor Paul Wallace is a physicist who teaches He teaches physics and astronomy at Agnes Scott College, and also he teaches at Candler and Columbia Theological Seminary in Atlanta. But you also, now, Greg was just mentioning his students appreciate his open-mindedness, and I thought that about you, Paul, when I hear that you like Buddhism.
Oh yeah, I do have a real affection. It's kind of like I'm married to Christianity, but I have this little secret crush, you know, on Buddhism. Yeah, I do, and I always have ever since I took my first world religions class in college
with John Kay.
Yeah, with John Kay, and I think I like it because it's so scientific in spirit. It's very pragmatic. It's very do-it-yourself. It's very stripped down and sort of like let's just try to solve the problem of suffering. You know, let's not talk about metaphysics. Let's not talk about angels or God. Let's just talk about what we're going to do to relieve suffering. And I appreciate that pragmatic approach very much. And it's deeply philosophical as well, which I like.
And do people, for example, when you're in your role as teacher, when you're wearing that hat, do people know that you also are open-minded enough to see a Buddhist point of view?
Well, I have this huge, when I went to go teach in India, I was given a gift, several gifts, but one of them is this beautiful big flag with the Buddhist symbol, the endless knot, it's called. And it's a symbol of several things in Buddhist philosophy. There's this beautiful big flag, and it's right over my desk in my office. I'm looking at it right now. So I have received several questions about that, you know, what that represents. Mm-hmm. I have a little crucifix over here as well on the other wall.
And so they walk in and say, "What kind of physicist are you,
yeah,
Professor Wallace?"
Yeah. So they have the Buddhist endless knot, and it's pretty conspicuous in my office. So people do ask about it, yeah.
My guests are Paul Wallace and Greg Cuzzona. Greg Cuzzona teaches at Chico State University, and Paul Wallace teaches physics and astronomy at Agnes Scott College in Decatur, Georgia. There's a sentence in your book that I want to ask you about, Paul, and that is, you say, Christianity is irreducibly anthropocentric.
Yes. Yeah, I think that it is. I think that, you know, by that I mean that Christianity is about people, and it's about our problems, our needs, our orientation to God, and it's about ourselves. It's a way of locating ourselves in the cosmos and making sense of our lives. In that sense, I do think it's, and if you take away the importance of human beings in Christianity, you no longer have Christianity, because you no longer have Jesus Christ incarnate. And so it is irreducibly about us. It's about God as well. Yeah, it is about God as well. But you can't take us out and have the same thing.
Was that some of the appeal, Greg, for you in reading Paul's book?
That was part of the appeal, absolutely. And then some of the ways that he helps us revision, you know, what it means to look at the world from a scientific point of view, which doesn't privilege, per se, the human being, but gives a much more expansive understanding. You know, if we look at the history of the universe, human beings, even Homo sapiens in their entirety, which, you know, you could say is 200,000 years approximately, if you put 24-hour day, that's just before midnight in the history of the universe since the Big Bang. So one of the things that I think we need to do when we look at science is recognize that we're not that big in the plan, as it were, of the cosmos. Now, I think as a Christian, I understand that God has a particular communication that he's making with us through the scripture, and that in my estimation is why it focuses on us, but we can have that greatly expanded, that meaning this view of the world and the cosmos through science. And that's one of the profound contributions of science.
You mentioned Homo sapiens, and Paul, you say in your book that Homo habilis hurt your feelings.
Yeah, people really like that sentence. I've heard more about that sentence, I think, than I've heard any, as I say that Homo habilis, which, you know, is one of our distant ancestors, hurt my feelings when I was a child because I saw this picture of Homo habilis, and I got the idea that this was our ancestor, and it hurt my feelings that I came from, you know, such a strange looking beast.
Well, you had a lot of questions, it seemed to me, when you were growing up, when you would look at information about the history of the world and try to reconcile it with what you had learned in, say, Sunday school class.
Yes, it started with me very early. The whole question about science and religion started before I knew there was even a thing called science and religion, you know.
Well, and when you're a little kid, you're thinking, people tell you a story about Adam and Eve, that these were real people.
Right, well, yeah, when you're 10 or 8, whatever, that's all you got. you have these pictures of, you know, human beings walking around, one named Adam, one named Eve. There was a snake, there was an apple or a fruit, whatever it was. You know, that's the level you operate at. And I didn't find any of those things in the natural history books I was looking at.
Mm-hmm. And you say you were quite taken with those books of natural history, even
yes,
a little
I
kid.
Yes, I was.
Well, Greg, when you were growing up, what kinds of, I guess you like to read?
Yes, I did. You know, it's funny, I didn't have that kind of background as a kid, that there was Adam and Eve walking around or however that would work in religious
So you didn't
texts.
Have these notions that you had to kind of push aside as false because you didn't get them to begin with.
Right. I mean, then that's always a really interesting thing to read in books because I know a lot of people have that as a deep experience in their lives. I know it was in the text and the chapters that Paul wrote. For me, it just was not – that was not something that happened to me, you know, that these deeply early experiences with religious texts, Christian texts, and so on. So I often say that I study when emerging adults move into emerging adulthood and become nuns or not religiously affiliating. For me, it was starting as a nun and moving into being a Christian. So I've kind of reversed
maybe,
that.
Maybe that's why you're so fascinated with it.
Well, and that's what I meant by yours is quite atypical. I would say Paul's is more typical, being raised
yes.
in some religion and then reaching the age when you say, no, I don't think I believe that stuff.
Yeah, no, I think that's true.
Yeah.
And what's interesting now, I would say, is that in teaching at Chico State, I am sometimes actually, even though I have this background of a secular, you know, worldview, that many of my Chico State students also have almost no religious understanding whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when I used to do this introduction to Christianity and science in my class, I just assumed people knew what the Bible was. They really don't know what the Bible is. And I don't mean this in any slight. If it sounds like that, that's not what I'm saying. But they're ignorant in the sense that they just don't know. They don't know what a chapter of the Bible is. They don't know where Genesis is, what it describes. They don't know the Gospels. So I had to then do like this, you know, quick and dirty one day, you know, which is an hour and 15 minutes introduction to the Bible, just to give people a sense of how you find out where you get these ideas. So so I think increasingly people have no religious affiliation or no religious knowledge, I think.
Yeah, you know, I think so too.
What's going through my mind as you're saying that is it's so much of world literature, Western European literature, assumes a basic foundation in the Bible.
Yes.
And if people, how can they understand some of this literature of past centuries if they don't have that foundation in the Bible? In fact, I know somebody who was raised Catholic. You say, well, we didn't study the Bible when you were growing up Catholic. And he almost said it as a point of being proud of that fact. And I thought, no, you don't want to be proud of ignorance of any kind.
Yeah,
and
right.
So I persuaded him at this little college where Paul attended to, it wasn't John Kay's class, but to go to a class in, I think it was the New Testament, just to fill in the gaps as an educated person to know something about the Bible.
I think that's absolutely right. And going into the classes I teach now, more of my religious studies classes, I find that people are really hungry to read the Bible, especially about Jesus, as long as some of that, you know, compulsion to believe that some people feel is removed. In other words, if you look at this character in the scripture of Jesus, he's really, really compelling. And so you bring in a kind of a history of Jesus approach to say, well, let's look at this character as a great historical figure. Now, also, you can take that and you can have belief about it like I do. And there's, again, where I will, you know, come out, as it were. But he's just a fascinating person, like the Buddha is. I mean, a fascinating person.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make those equivalent, except to say that there's a similarity that there is an interest, a similar interest, I think.
Right, right.
And
no doubt about that.
This is Greg Kutsona, who was just speaking. He teaches in the Department of Religious Studies and Humanities at California State University. And we're having a conversation with physicist Paul Wallace, who has just published his book, Stars Beneath Us. And your first chapter, Paul, is entitled, Is This What Love Looks Like? You put love in your first chapter.
Yes.
Why did you do that?
You know, the idea is simple. You know, God is love. And so love should be reflected in what God makes. It's pretty simple. You know, you find the personality or the character of the creator in the creation, whether it's God or whether it's, you know, Picasso or whoever. But when I was a child and I started learning about the cosmos and watching, you know, looking around me closely and reading about it, I saw a lot of things that bothered me. I saw, you know, just enormous amounts of suffering. I saw genetic accidents. I saw, you know, seemingly random, you know, deaths of people. And I saw this sort of weird, long past that we have on the Earth with all these weird creatures that have come and gone and, you know, died. And there's just so much death and so much weirdness in the world. That's not what love looked like to me. You know, the whole story of life on Earth is not what, you know, at that age, it was not what I thought love looked like. And so that's where that title comes from.
My guest who was just speaking is Paul Wallace. He teaches physics and astronomy at Agnes Scott College in Decatur, Georgia, which is near Atlanta. And my other guest is Greg Cuzzona, who teaches at California State University. And Greg, I did say I wanted you to tell us about the Chico Triad, and I thought Paul might be interested in this group that gets together. Tell us about the Chico Triad.
Yes, the Chico Triad, the full name is the Chico Triad on Philosophy, Theology, and Science. It's a group of academics and independent scholars in the area from these disciplines of philosophy, theology, biblical studies, religious studies, biology, chemistry, etc., that gets together once a month, and we generally have a paper being presented and then have a discussion. We started about 12 years ago, and we did it at the church, at Bidwell Presbyterian Church. And then because of parking on Thursday nights when we were meeting, we moved
I might mention to Paul that on Thursday nights here in Chico, there's a wonderful farmer's market all summer long.
And it's right where the church is and the university, so it's impossible to park. So we moved it to my house, which meant that we could also have wine while we were meeting. And then the numbers doubled, so that was good too.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Yeah, and the conversations probably got better.
That's right. So one of the topics we're talking about around the time of this that's happening in these weeks is what does it mean to be human? You were talking about Homo sapien, Homo habilis, and so on, and we're having a paper on what does it mean to be human? What's the development of humanity paleontologically and et cetera? And then how does that correlate with the texts of Genesis 2 and 3 on Adam and Eve? And that's the kind of topic we'll have at the Chico Triad. I mean, there are many, many others, but we're really interested in bringing together these different disciplines, sometimes from a Christian perspective, sometimes not from a purely Christian perspective. So one of the things we've also done besides the monthly meeting is a yearly conference that traditionally was at the church, and I know, Nancy, I've seen you there, which is great.
Yes, it's a wonderful event.
And so this year, coming up in the spring, we're talking about doing it at Chico State and broadening it in connection with the Department of Religious Studies or Comparative Religion and doing a Religions and the Sciences conference. So really looking the question of Buddhism and science or actually alternative nature religions and science I will do Christianity and emerging adults in science. And we're even looking into would a non-religious perspective be interesting? So how does a materialist or atheist connect with science? And so that's another part of what the Chico Triad has done is to put on these public conferences because our charter when we got set up was to do good academic research work and then to present those findings to a wider public.
To the community as a whole.
Yeah, and it goes back to these 70% of the people, just the people who walk around in the emerging adult world, and I can extrapolate to be pretty much the same for the rest of the population, that want to find how do you reconcile these? How do you at least not put them in a culture war all the time? I mean, I think that's that deep sense. We don't really want to have Bill Nye and Ken Ham arguing all the time.
Right, exactly.
And I mentioned this, usually it's a Friday evening and a Saturday event.
That's right, and it's in the spring, so stay tuned for that date.
Yes, probably dates haven't been selected yet, but in the area here in Northern California, people can look for that event sponsored by the Chico Triad.
We have, this college, Agnes Scott and Emory University very nearby, as well as Columbia. I wonder if we could start something like that.
I thought that might appeal to you, Paul.
That sounds great. Well, and I should say that the grant project that I'm working on is funding ministries, Christian ministries particularly, that work with science and that work with college and post-college, but especially college students, to integrate faith and science. So some there are churches, but also universities that we have funded to do projects and create these kind of dialogue groups or a lot of other kind of projects that are happening. And the reason behind that is I do think these two great forces of religion and science have so much promise, and we want to bring a reconciliation between them. Now, one of the, if I can just do one more little soapboxy sure. thing, is one of the elements of that concerns me deeply is that many of our Christian, many Christians in our country are resistant to evolutionary science and to science as a whole. And so part of this is to help people engage with Christians who are scientists and to see, well, if you hear evolution described by a person who's an elder in your church or has done your youth group,
yeah,
it's going to be
right.
different from the way Richard Dawkins describes it.
right.
And you may not have all the, you know, atheist materialist baggage that goes along with it. And
right.
and you may say, well, wow, this is actually a theory, by which I mean a guiding scientific paradigm that has been in operation since 1859 and has not been disproven. And in fact, 99% of AAAS, American Association for the Advancement of Science, scientists subscribe to evolution. So we would do well as a church, as meaning people who are Christians, to also see the value of this form of science. And so that's another part of this, that I don't want the church to stand in the way of the glory of science, because science actually came through many church or Christian figures
right.
over time.
Right.
And I don't want to lose that that connection.
Yes, the you know, if you see, context is everything.
Yep.
You know, if there's a 18-year-old sitting in a church hearing about evolution, that's very different than that 18-year-old sitting and watching Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about evolution.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Nothing wrong with Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's just a different thing.
It is a different thing. And if there are cultural resistances that a person has that are religious, those are brought down by those are suppressed if that person who's saying it is part of their in group and they endorse the idea of engaging it. And they should, because it's good science.
Right. That's right.
Well, I'm guessing that, Paul, you're a speaker and that you get invited to speak on topics. I suspect there more tend to be on religion than on physics when you're asked to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about science, but I don't do technical science. You know, I talk about, you know, sort of I talk about science quite a lot in my talks on a popular level, but not on a technical level.
Mm-hmm. That I would think people would be curious about that. And then, Greg, when you're invited on the Today Show, for example, what do they want you to? What questions do they have for you?
Well, it wasn't about science and faith the last time I was on. It was about another book I was doing. About finding boundaries in life, called "Say Yes to No." So, but who knows? That could be something for the future that I need to pitch to them.
Yes, I would think so. So you're accustomed to being interviewed in the media in various subjects.
Yes, and always welcome it. So again, thanks for having me connect with you and with Paul. This is really wonderful.
Yes, it's been great.
Well, and Paul, thank you for your new book, Stars Beneath Us, Finding God in the Evolving Cosmos.
You're very welcome.
And I will look forward, Greg, when you finish your book. Your new book is Emerging Adults, Christian Faith and Science.
That's right.
Thank you both.
You're very welcome.
You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.